And good morning. It is 16 minutes after 8 a.m. and you're tuned to your community radio station, Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Joining me in the studio is Dr. Jennifer Purcell. She's the Sitka Sound Science Center scientist in residence. She's a marine scientist who specializes in jellyfish. And joining Dr. Purcell is Lisa Bush, director of the Sitka Sound Science Center. Welcome to Morning Edition.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Well, and welcome to Sitka, Dr. Purcell. How long have you been here?
Just a couple of days, and it's been very, very nice. The weather's beautiful, and the people are friendly, and there are lots of birds. I like to watch birds and animals. I've met a sea lion, so it's very nice. I like it here.
Well, may I call you Jennifer? Is that okay?
Call me Jenny.
Jenny, okay. Yeah. Well, Jenny, you are in town because you're the resident fellow. What will you be doing while you're here?
Well, I hope to be able to teach the people in Sitka and engage them in some jellyfish learning and research and enthusiasm. The people of Sitka are very focused on the water, many fishermen and all, and jellyfish are in the water. Most people are aware of them, but only the big ones, and there are small ones as well. They're very beautiful, but they also are sort of negative for fish. In general, and I think that there's a combination of things that we can do together. The scientists and the people that are working on the water are maybe able to collect some jellyfish data, and so I'm hoping to get people enthusiastic about doing some of that.
How long have you been studying jellyfish?
I've been studying jellyfish nearly 40 years, and I was lucky to be able to get involved with them. I did actually some open water diving to study jellyfish, and I was early in the game where before people realized that jellyfish were important. We kept saying that. The people that studied them said that they were important, but very few people were listening. And now there seem to be increasing populations and increasing problems with jellyfish around the world. So a lot of people, the public and the media, are very concerned about the jellyfish. People don't like to be stung by jellyfish in general. So they're getting a lot more attention. So I was in on the ground floor and have a lot of experience now.
So you're saying that jellyfish numbers are increasing. Are they sort of an indicator species? Do they indicate something underlying that's happening in the ecosystem that we should be aware of?
Well, I think that they do, for sure. There are many, many things that humans have done to damage the environment, and the jellyfish seem to be very tolerant of most of those things and actually benefit from them, the things that we're doing. We've done a lot of things that damage the fish populations, like catch them, and that leaves more food for the jellyfish. So and global warming is probably affecting them as well. So lots of things that are working together.
What kind of jellyfish do we have here?
Lots. I collect, actually, on Thursday when I give my talk, I'll be bringing some. We went out yesterday and from a fish dock collected about six different species. Probably the ones that people see and relate to most are the moon jellies that form the big patches in the water, and then the lion's manes, which people don't like because they sting them quite badly. But there are a lot of little ones, too.
So, Lisa, can you tell us about Thursday? What's happening?
Well, yes, the University of Alaska and the Sitka Sound Science Center have a program called the Natural History Seminar Series that is run by Kitty LaBounty, who works at the university, and she's on the Science Center board. Jenny is going to be giving a lecture at 7:30 at the university. But I wanted to just also mention sort of a little bit about the evolution of how she arrived into town. And that really was sparked by a conversation I had with Steve Reifenstuhl at NSERA, who was telling us that NSERA was thinking of changing some of their release sites with Chinook salmon because of jellyfish. And that the jellyfish were getting in seiners were hauling in a lot of jellyfish, and trollers were bothered by the jellyfish as well. And then we, over the last 2 years, have been getting a lot of anecdotal reports of an increase in jellyfish populations in Sitka Sound. And Jenny is very modest, but she is one of the experts, the foremost experts on jellyfish, certainly on the West in the Pacific. And she studies them all over the world, in the Mediterranean as well. So we feel really lucky to have her in our community, to have an expert like this in our community. And I would really like to encourage people in the community who are listening now, if you have questions about jellyfish, stop by the Science Center or give us a call, and you can arrange to meet with Jenny. She's very accessible and very interested in talking to people in the community.
I've heard the back door is a good place to meet people in town, so maybe I will go there. I like coffee.
Yeah, and while she's in the community, she's going to be doing things in addition to the Natural History Seminar Series. She's going to be helping with the BioBlitz, and she's going to be in the Mount Edgecombe High School classrooms, and also in the meeting with the Keet Gushihin 5th Grade Super Science Club, and hopefully she's going to be, we're going to be setting up some meetings with fishermen as well. So a variety of things that we always like to do with our scientists and residency fellows, which is funded, by the way, by the National Science Foundation, to bring polar and subpolar scientists to our community and engage with the community about the topics of science. And we're so lucky in Sitka because people in Sitka are so interested in a breadth of scientific disciplines. So
Jenny, what compelled you to come up here when you were invited? What is it about Sitka that's interesting?
Well, I was I live down in Bellingham, and I actually thought this was a good connection. It doesn't seem like it's that far. I've worked in British Columbia and Alaska before, and one of the things that I want to talk about is large-scale sampling from the air of jellyfish, and it seemed like a very good connection between the two universities and marine labs. So I thought it would be fun to try and get the community, the whole, you know, academic community and the public involved in a larger scale effort of research.
So you're trying to do some citizen science while you're
yes,
here then?
Yes, definitely I'd like to do that.
Okay, and you're saying one of the first people to really be interested in jellyfish. Why? What was it about jellyfish that sparked your interest?
Well, I saw my first jellyfish when I was 4, and I remember that. It was in a freshwater lake in Missouri. But I knew I wanted to be a marine biologist when I was in high school, so even though I grew up in Kansas City. I just was lucky and ended up with an advisor that was working in the open ocean, and I knew a lot about the group, which includes corals and other stinging animals, that includes jellyfish. So I started studying jellyfish, and it was clear that nobody else was. And the more I learned about them, the more I realized how really interesting and, really interesting they are and important.
And so you're interested in some aerial surveys to get this overview mm-hmm. of populations. And boots on the ground, what are you hoping Sitkins can help you with a little more specifically?
Well, I think jellyfish come up in the nets. And I think that the fishermen and anybody that's interested in walking a dock, seeing a jellyfish, other regions have started citizen science programs with apps on their phone. People can take pictures and instantly record that they've seen a jellyfish. And this becomes a global database. You know, it's an amazing tool. It's very expensive. There are still very few jellyfish biologists compared with fish biologists, for example. You probably haven't met anybody but me. there are a lot of ways that people can help and contribute to the knowledge of jellyfish and how they interact with fish.
Well, Lisa, can you remind us how folks can get in touch with Jenny if they're interested in the citizen science or have questions about jellyfish or want to know more about how they can see Jenny?
The best thing to do is to call the Science Center and talk to Lauren Bell, who is the Scientist in Residency Fellowship Director, and set something up. Okay. 747-8878.
Great. Well, thank you both so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having
thank
us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Dr. Jennifer Purcell, Sitka Sound Science Center scientist in residence, a marine scientist who specializes in jellyfish. We also heard from Lisa Bush, the director of the Science Center.
You can hear everybody play at the Sitka Folk Open Mic. It'll happen at the Larkspur Cafe on the 24th of Sunday night. 6:30, sign up if you want to play. At 7, the show gets underway. You can hear everybody play at the Sitka Folk Open Mic. It's a benefit for Sitka Folk. Suggested donation, $5.
As the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, it's the 20th of April, 2016. It was on this date in 1841, Edgar Allan Poe's story, The Murders in the Rue Morgue, first appeared in a magazine, now considered the first modern detective story. Poe himself was the editor of the magazine, story in which a mother and daughter have been brutally murdered in a fourth-floor room that was locked from the inside. And the detective, Monsieur Auguste Dupin, solves the crime. The murder was committed by an orangutan who was armed with a straight razor and who scaled the building and came in through the window. Dupin appeared again in two more stories by Poe, The Mystery of Marie Roget and The Purloined Letter, and he is considered to have inspired many other literary detectives, Hercule Poirot of Agatha Christie and Sherlock Holmes of Arthur Conan Doyle. It's the birthday of the sculptor Daniel Chester French, Exeter, New Hampshire, 1850, who did, among other things, the seated figure of Abraham Lincoln at the Lincoln Memorial. He was a self-taught sculptor. It's the birthday of the novelist Sebastian Falks, Donnington, England, 1953, who read Dickens and D.H. Lawrence when he was a boy, decided to be a novelist, spent a year studying in Paris. Sebastian Falks said, at that time, France was a very old-fashioned country. You could branch off any main road in any of the provinces, and in 5 minutes you would be back in the 1930s. So when he started writing novels, he set his novels in France, mostly in the 30s and the 40s, The Girl at the Lion d'Or and Birdsong and Charlotte Gray. Here's a poem for today by Billy Collins, The Sandhill Cranes of Nebraska. Too bad you weren't here 6 months ago, was a lament I heard on my visit to Nebraska. You could have seen the astonishing spectacle of the sandhill cranes, thousands of them, feeding and even dancing on the shores of the Platte River. There was no point in pointing out the impossibility of my being there then because I happened to be somewhere else. So I nodded and put on a look of mild disappointment, if only to be part of the commiseration. It was the same look I remember wearing about 6 months ago in Georgia when I was told that I had just missed the spectacular annual outburst of azaleas, brilliant against the green backdrop of spring, and the same in Vermont, 6 months before that, when I arrived shortly after the magnificent foliage had gloriously peaked, Mother Nature, as she is called, having touched the hills with her many-colored brush, a phenomenon that occurs, like the others, around the same time every year, when I am, apparently, off in another state, stuck in a motel lobby with the local paper and a styrofoam cup of coffee, busily missing God knows what. The Sandhill Cranes of Nebraska by Billy Collins from his collection Aimless Love, published by Random House and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. And by TIAA, whether it's investing, advice, banking, or retirement, TIAA is committed to helping those who do good do well. Learn more at TIAA.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Gossiping is something that somebody tells a different person, and it's either a lie or something that they don't know is true.
Gossiping can be very rude, and I don't want to be gossiping.
Girls on the Run is so much fun!
Brought to you in Southeast Alaska by Safe, Aware, and Wish.
This is a matter of fact, teaching you a new Tlingit word and a little science of the world around you every week. Octopus. Naq.
Octopus saliva is venomous and contains a paralytic compound that keeps prey from struggling and injuring the octopus.
Octopus. Naq.
This is a matter of fact, bringing together language and science to tell the story of the land and the ocean. Brought to you by the Sitka Tribe of Alaska and the Sitka Sound Science Center.
Sounds wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
A boat idles in a cove on a summer afternoon, pulling up a set of shrimp pots. The first one comes in with a nice catch of spot shrimp. Spot shrimp are the biggest shrimp in the North Pacific and are highly valued by commercial pot fishers and subsistence users alike. Spot shrimp, along with pink, coonstripe, and humpy shrimp, are one of the five species of pandallid shrimp found in the cool waters off the coast of Alaska. Pandallid shrimp are one of the rare hermaphroditic animals. They change their sex. Specifically, they are protandrous hermaphrodites. The shrimp spends the early part of its adult life as male and then changes into a female for the rest of its life. A pink shrimp will typically mature sexually as a male, spawn one or more times, pass through a short transitional phase, and subsequently mature and spawn as a female. Shrimp spawn in the fall and eggs are incubated over the winter. In the spring, the eggs hatch into planktonic, free-swimming larvae. By midsummer, the larvae have undergone several molts, rapidly increasing in size. After the last larval molt, the juvenile shrimp settles to the bottom. After a year or so, the juvenile molts and develops into a mature male and may spawn as a male for one or two seasons. But some juveniles never mature into males. Instead, they develop directly into females. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford. Sounds Wild is brought to you by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Good morning. It is just about 35 minutes after 8 a.m. and you're tuned to your community radio station, Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 43 degrees under sunny skies and winds are calm out at the Rocky Gutierrez Airport. Most of our listening communities will see sun today and then increasing clouds this evening, and it should be mostly cloudy tomorrow. Across the region, expect highs today in the upper 50s and lows tonight in the upper 30s to low 40s. Yakutat, you may also see a little bit of fog this morning, and your temperatures, as usual, will be lower. Taking a quick look at the local news stories we heard this morning, City Attorney Robin Schmid will be resigning effective June 1st. The Assembly accepted her resignation during annual evaluations Tuesday night. We also heard an update on the outdoor education instructor who was injured in a bear mauling near Haines on Monday. He is said to be in serious condition at Providence Hospital in Anchorage as of Tuesday afternoon. 35-year-old UAS assistant professor Forrest Wagner was with a group of 11 students and two teaching assistants on Mount Emmerich on Monday when he was attacked by what state troopers say was a sow with cubs. We also heard how the cruise passenger vessel tax, which brings millions of dollars each year to communities around the state has been audited, and the audit has found that some towns, including Sitka, need to tighten standards for how they spend the money. You can listen to or read most Raven news stories again on our website, kcaw.org, which is also where you can find the community calendar, see what's going on in your listening community, or post an event or announcement. A few things that are happening today: 4:30 p.m. animal mask workshop at the Sitka Public Library, 6:30 a compost class at the Sitka Unitarian Hall, story lab at 3:30 for grades 6 through 8, and then there's indoor hockey at 6:30 at the Hames Center and ultimate frisbee at 7 at Moeller Field. Our next tide coming up will be at 1. That will be an 8.8-foot high tide. And at 6:55 this evening, we'll have a 1.4-foot low tide. The sun rose at 5:39. It will set at 8:24 this evening for 14 hours and 45 minutes of daylight, and a gain of 4 minutes and 42 seconds over yesterday. Well, it's 8:37. That's all for my time here with you this morning. I'm going to make way for the garden show, which will take you up to about 9 a.m. Thanks so much for joining me this morning, and I'll be here bright and early with you tomorrow for Morning Edition. Do stay tuned and have a great day.
Programming on KCAW is provided by First Bank, a local funding source for boat loans, home loans, and remodel projects with a home equity loan or line of credit. First Bank, the one who's here. Member FDIC and equal housing lender.
This station receives support from Garden Ventures, now stocking flowering trees, early blooming perennials, garden tools, and fertilizers. Open daily 9:30 to 5:30. Garden Ventures. More information can be found on the Garden Ventures Facebook page or 747-5329.
Hello and welcome to The Garden Show. I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty LaBounty.
And this is a pre-recorded version, so I'm sorry you can't give us a ring this evening, but we're still delighted to share a Saturday evening with you to talk about gardening.
One way or the other. And remember, if you have a question for us that you're just, you know, really want to get to us, and maybe you don't have the opportunity to call, even when we are actually live, remember you can write down that question and send it to the radio station, or call it in, and no doubt we'll get it sooner or later.
Because we really want to make this show about what you need to hear or want to hear about.
So if you want, however, I should put a caveat on that. If you need to hear and want to hear that you can grow tomatoes outside, you're not going to hear that. So we'll stick within reason, yes?
Right.
Okay. So what we were thinking about for today was thinking about the chores that we're doing in our own gardens, getting them ready to plant vegetables and flowers.
Right. We still have about a week to go before frost-free, at least on our local level. And there are microclimates around Southeast Alaska. So whatever your frost-free date is, keep that in mind. There was frost this week. Below freezing temperatures. So if you were trying to set out anything that's very tender, you may have learned that it was too cold.
The hard way.
But the good part of that is that we're not in a huge rush either.